Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll hear from Representative John Klein, who joined us at the Minnesota State Fair to talk about furloughs in Minnesota and gridlock in Washington. But before we begin, we'd like to take a moment to remember a great friend of this show. After a long and courageous battle with cancer, former U.S. Senator Rod Grams passed away this week at his home in Crown, Minnesota. He was the co-owner of our first two Minnesota Military Radio Network affiliate stations, KLTF and Our Country WIRQ in Little Falls. Our thoughts are with his wife, Chris, and his family. Thank you, Senator, for everything you've done for our state and our nation. And now it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
We observe National Hispanic Heritage Month from September 15th through October 15th each year to celebrate the histories, cultures, and contributions of American citizens whose ancestors came from Spain, Mexico, the Caribbean, and Central and South America. September 15th is an important date because it marks the anniversary of the independence of five Latin American countries: Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua. Our soldiers and airmen of Hispanic descent contribute daily to the success of our mission. Their unique cultural experiences add value to our organization and our communities. This value has inspired our organization to get involved in local Hispanic community events throughout the year across our state. The Minnesota National Guard continuously seeks the enlistment of soldiers that reflect the communities in which we serve. We strive to promote an environment that truly represents the demographics of the soldiers we lead.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now, and we're recording live from the Minnesota State Fair, is Congressman John Klein. Congressman, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
I am very, very happy to be here with you.
Congressman, this was quite a day at the State Fair, Military Appreciation Day. And it's just a tad warm, isn't it?
It's quite warm, Tom, quite warm. And the attendance is down. I think the vendors are having a little bit of trouble selling things as fast as they usually do. It's just awful hot to be out here eating. But it's still a great state fair. The events today honoring veterans are absolutely terrific. I see my friend, the Adjutant General of the state of Minnesota, is here, General Nash. A lot of people walking around with Vietnam veteran caps and shirts and things, and it just kind of makes you proud. They seem to be pretty pumped up. They're happy to be here, and I'm happy to be here with them.
4,000 of my fellow Vietnam veterans here marching in parade today, and they all have a vote, sir.
Indeed they do, and they should exercise it wisely.
And I'm sure they will. Congressman, for those two or three people in Minnesota that don't know about your military career, could you tell us, we've talked about it before, quite a storybook career.
Well, it was just terrific. I was very, very fortunate. Went into the Marines when I graduated college in 1969, commissioned as second lieutenant, thought I was going in for 3 years. That was my commitment, and 25 years later, it dawned on me that the 3 years was up, and I retired as a colonel then in 1994. Wonderful assignments. I was a helicopter pilot, served in Vietnam, had the opportunity to command all the Marine Aviation Forces in Somalia during Operation Restore Hope. And then I had some sort of magical jobs where I got to fly Marine One. I was with that squadron for 4 years, and then I was assigned to the White House to be the Marine Corps aide to President Carter and then President Reagan, carrying the football. Every time I would even remotely think that maybe my 3 years was up, there'd be another terrific assignment. So it was a labor of love the whole time. And when I talk to these veterans that are here today, most of them will tell you that they really enjoyed their experience.
25 years in the United States Marine Corps and retired as a full colonel.
That was a great time.
Congressman, did you ever stop to think that if you didn't run for Congress and maybe stayed in the Marine Corps, you'd have a star or two by now?
probably better folks to be generals than me. I'm very proud of my son, by the way, if I could take just a minute. He's in the Army. That was probably just a failure of leadership on my part that he went to the Army instead of the Marines. But he's been selected for colonel, full colonel. He'll pin that on in a couple of months. He's going to be a brigade commander down at Hunter Army Airfield in Savannah, Georgia. He was with the 101st for 7 years, served a combat tour in Iraq and two in Afghanistan. I'm enormously proud of him and everybody, all of our men and women in uniform who serve so selflessly in some really, really tough corners of the world doing really tough things. And you see that with these older veterans, and that would be people my age, who are here, many of them Vietnam vets. It's quite a different time. I think that the respect and love that are shown to the men and women today is not what we saw towards the end of the Vietnam years. And some people got out bitter because they went back home and they were not welcomed. And I think we as a nation have learned a lot from that. You just don't see that now. I'm in airports sometimes. You see a soldier coming through in uniform and people still clap. Most of the airlines allow soldiers to go to the front of the line to get on the airplane. It's a very, very different climate than we had back then.
Congressman, I like to think that those people from our generation that did serve in Vietnam taught our children to respect those who serve. And I think we had a little bit to do with today's treatment of the service members and their families and taking good care of them today.
Well, I'll just agree with you on that. I certainly like to think so as well.
Congressman, I wanted to ask you, now you ran for office in January of 2003. Was that the first time?
That's when I was sworn in. I actually ran in 1998 and lost. And I ran in 2000 and lost. And then I ran again in 2002 and won and was sworn in January of 2003.
So 10 years in the Congress.
Right.
And you serve on a couple of committees. You're the chairman of the Committee on Education and the Workforce.
Right.
And you serve on the House Armed Services Committee.
Yes, I do. I like both committees a lot. Obviously, there's tons of legislation involved in both committees. Being the chairman of the Education and Workforce Committee, it's a real time bandit. Take a lot of time there. But obviously, my first love and the reason I ran for Congress in the first place was because I wanted to do things to help our men and women in uniform. I had spent all those years on active duty myself. I was concerned about what was happening to our armed forces back in 1994, 95, 96. I thought I could do something about it. I like to feel like I have. I've been successful in getting some legislation passed that I think has been helpful to our men and women in uniform. And it's comfortable for me because when I'm doing business in the Armed Service Committee, I am familiar with the issues just because I lived them for so long, and that's pretty helpful.
Sir, I've read that there are fewer veterans in Congress today than there have been since World War II. Is that true, you think?
The fewest since World War II. Well, I'm not sure because we got a little infusion here a couple of years ago, 4 years ago. We now have a number of Iraq and Afghanistan vets in Congress, and that's heartening. But the old guys are, you know, the very few older vets that are left. There used to be a lot. At one time, I think there were 35 Marines, for example, in Congress, and now I think there's seven, to give you a sense of that drawdown.
So the World War II and the Korean generation is done in Congress, and we're still there from Vietnam, and we're getting some help from the younger generations of service members.
Right.
Sir, I wanted to ask you about in Congress. We've all read and we've seen the fights and the tussles between the Democrats and Republicans, and seen a lot of instances where not too much is getting done. It seems like partisan politics kind of gets in the way. Is it getting any better?
Not a lot better. Where there are very, very big differences between the parties. Fundamentally, you have one party that thinks that more spending and therefore more borrowing and more taxing would be good for the economy and good for country. That would be the other guys. And then you have a party that thinks fiscal responsibility, fewer regulations, lower taxes would be better. So we come from different views, and it's sometimes hard to come together. We've got some very, very tough decisions coming up where I believe we have to come together. One side or the other can't do it by itself. The Republicans have the majority in the House of Representatives. The Democrats have the majority in the Senate. And, of course, you've got President Obama in the White House. And yet you have these issues coming up. We really do need to solve the sequestration problem, which is particularly vexing to the Department of Defense, but it affects all departments. Not that we couldn't afford to reduce some government spending, because I certainly think that we could, but the way sequestration works, it's across-the-board cutting. That is, you can't set priorities in spending, and we need to be able to do that. So we need to address that issue. We've got, as you pointed out, we've got differing budgets at different levels. The House passed a budget at one level of spending. The Senate passed a budget at a different level of spending. We need to bring those things together because we're going to hit the debt limit probably in October. So we have just a number of issues coming up in September and October where we need to come together and find some solutions.
Congressman, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you about some of the legislation pending in Congress and some of the things you've been able to accomplish.
Great.
We've been speaking with Congressman John Klein on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been joined today by Congressman John Klein. And we've been talking about legislation and his career in the military. And Congressman, we talked a little bit about sequestration. I'm not sure a lot of folks understand what it is, but it was a device that Congress put in place so that if you didn't agree on budgets, it would automatically cause some cuts. And one of the things that it's caused is some things called furloughs. And here in Minnesota, that means that some of the people that kind of live on the edge and can ill afford to take a 20% cut in pay have had to do that. Now, some of those have been cut back. What I'm concerned about is this fiscal year ends September 30th. October 1st starts a new fiscal year. If Congress doesn't pass a budget, does sequestration hit us again for the next fiscal year?
Well, sequestration is just in place. So the answer is yes, unless we can agree to make some changes in the existing law. And I think there is an opportunity for that. Clearly, if we could make some reforms to the big automatic spending program, sometimes called entitlement spending, things like Social Security and Medicare, which need to be reformed to preserve those programs themselves. There is a huge unfunded liability in those programs which needs to be addressed, and some of it could be done relatively easily. If, for example, the president would step up with some leadership on reforming Social Security and do what was done in the 1980s, that is very slowly, over time, raise the retirement age, because as somebody yesterday told me, we're talking about totally unrelated issues, he said, well, gosh, everybody knows that we're living longer and working longer. Why can't we do that? And that's a good question. Why can't we do that? Because if we could make some modest reforms in Social Security, we would have a very big impact in the long-term unfunded liabilities that are associated with that program. It would not affect anybody who is on Social Security now, just like it was largely invisible back in the 80s when we slowly, slowly, slowly crept that retirement age up. If you do that, I think you could start to break the dam and get some agreement to go back in and change the law and make some fixes to sequestration, because the Defense Department is disproportionately hit. That's the way the program was set up when the president proposed it and the Congress agreed to it. And we need to have the ability to go in and change those priorities. So I think there is growing recognition on both sides of the aisle that we really need to fix this, and that's helpful towards getting a resolution.
So what do you really think the chances are of the House and Senate getting together and passing a budget to resolve some of these things like the furloughs?
Well, better and better, because, as I said, people on both sides of the aisle recognize that certainly defense is being hurt, but other programs, too, across the board. So there is a growing pressure to do something to fix this, and if it were easy, it would have been done a long time ago. So we know that there are going to be some tough decisions made as we go forward, and there are all kinds of issues out there that we're going to have to grapple with. One of the things I've heard a lot of lately is that some of my colleagues, mostly from Texas, say, well, if we don't defund Obamacare, we ought to let the government shut down on September 30th. The problem with that, your audience should know, is that the first people who don't get paid are the men and women in uniform. So the law allows for some essential services to continue even under the circumstance of not appropriating money or having a continuing resolution on September 30th. So air traffic controllers would continue to come in, for example. The military would continue to serve, including in Afghanistan, but they wouldn't get paid. That's just not acceptable. So there's a lot of work to be done by Republicans and Democrats and the president when we get back in session after Labor Day.
Sir, you know from your 25 years in the Marine Corps that when you're in the military, things happen and things go wrong, and you react to it and you get the job done. But today with these furloughs, I can't help but think it's affecting our readiness status and the attitudes of our military towards we're still working as hard as ever, and we'd sure like a budget to be passed so that we could have some certainty for next year.
Right. I think the Department of Defense is the furlough, the number of days has been about 6 days, but that 6 days you're not getting paid. A lot of civilian employees, we don't have quite as many here as some states that have great big bases with thousands and thousands of civilian employees that are getting hit with those furloughs. The readiness is being affected right now, and your listeners should know that. As you cut back rapidly, which is what's happening in a sequestration, that means you're cutting into operations and maintenance funding. It means you're not getting the training that you need to get. And as we get ready for not this next group that would be going to Afghanistan, but certainly the next one, they're simply not going to be sufficiently trained. That's unacceptable. So, again, a lot of work to be done, and there are a lot of opinions out there on what needs to happen to get it fixed, but Congress, Republicans and Democrats, House and Senate, need to come together to address that issue.
We're speaking with Congressman John Klein on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, I know you've been a big supporter of the Minnesota National Guard and our 34th Infantry Red Bull Division, and you've helped with a number of things that have gone wrong in the past. What type of legislation are you working on now?
Well, it's annoying. There are a number of things that where our men and women have been unfairly penalized. One of them, which we had to fight twice, was this thing called PDMRA, Post-Deployment Mobilization Respite Absence Program. I don't know who thinks up these names. But what it amounted to is that when the Red Bulls deployed, they were supposed to get paid time off when they came back. That got all messed up. We've had a big fight about 4 years ago, get it all sorted out. And then on the last deployment, the Pentagon changed the rules again after our men and women were already overseas. And it was one of those kind of battles where I remember talking to the Secretary of Defense, who at that time was Leon Panetta, and I said, look, clearly you meant to grandfather the people who are already deployed. Why wouldn't you do that? And he said, well, I don't know why we wouldn't do it. And so he went back over to the Pentagon and said, absolutely, we should do that. And he told the troops at the Pentagon to fix it. And the lawyers, bless their hearts, and the Pentagon said, well, no, Mr. Secretary, you can't do that. Congress has got to change the law. Well, I disagreed with the lawyers because the Secretary changed it with the program with a stroke of a pen. I don't know why he couldn't change it back. So we had to go and change the law. I got great cooperation. Senator Klobuchar picked up the bill in the Senate, and we carried it in the House, and we were able to get it through, and we fixed it. And so now you had about 1,000 or so of Minnesota Guardsmen who've been able to get the money that they were supposed to get. It's just way late. It's the kind of thing that shouldn't happen in the first place, but when it did, it was a little bit rewarding, if you will, to see that we could come together in a bipartisan way and fix that. And then there are other issues. There is trying to change the TRICARE Prime program, and we've got legislation to protect servicemen and women from being impacted by that change that the Pentagon has in there. There was a tuition assistance program that's being cut. We got a temporary fix put in for that. We're trying to get a permanent fix. Those things shouldn't be, because most of the time we're fighting the Pentagon over those.
Sir, I'm curious, on the House Armed Services Committee, do you see cooperation between both caucuses?
Actually, pretty well. The House Armed Services Committee is one of the more cooperative. We have more bipartisan cooperation on that committee than almost any other. Clearly, there are some differences, but we have every year been able to pass a National Defense Authorization Act bill, which is what you need in order to pay the troops and provide them what they need. And by and large, it's done in a very bipartisan way. There are a few issues, missile defense, that break out on a partisan basis, but it's pretty good.
Sir, on that committee, do you get into discussions of troop levels for active duty and how that's going to impact the Minnesota National Guard, the National Guard, and reserves?
Oh, yes, of course we do. And the problem now is being driven by the sequestration that we were talking about. So there are already planned reductions and reductions underway right now for both the Army and the Marine Corps. The Navy has been reducing strength for some time. As you know and your listeners know, we built up the end strength of the active duty Army and the active duty Marine Corps, in part because there was such an immediate and sudden burden being placed on the reserve component, including the National Guard and certainly Minnesota National Guard. The Red Bulls have gone and gone again, and people forget that they have other jobs. And so we put a lot of pressure on the Guard. So there was a conscious effort to increase the end strength, the active duty end strength. That's now being drawn back down. And what kind of pressure that puts on the Red Bulls will be driven by what kind of demands there are on them to serve again overseas.
So do you think you'll be able to, on your committee, reach some kind of consensus as the size of the active duty force and the Guard and Reserve?
I think so. We've done that repeatedly, but right now, because the sequestration cuts are automatic, you have to start making in-strength adjustments because of the amount of, driven by the amount of money that's available, not by the strategic concerns, and that's not the way we should be doing that.
It sounds like a never-ending question on the House Armed Services Committee, sir.
Well, it's a busy committee, works all the time. We get lots and lots and lots of classified briefings. We work issues, everything from Benghazi and what happened and what didn't happen and could defense have done more, classified intelligence issues. But certainly the big issues of the size and makeup of the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, and the National Guard and Reserves, those are ongoing discussions all the time, as well as policies. There's a big discussion about sexual assaults in the military, and should the military change its procedures for dealing with that. All of those issues are critically important to our men and women in uniform, and they are discussed, briefed, and debated all the time.
Sir, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, let's remember to thank these Vietnam veterans, anybody coming out to the fair. You see them here, whether it's today or any day. They deserve our thanks and appreciation.
Thank you for joining us today, sir.
You bet, Tom.
This is Congressman John Klein on Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll meet Paul Wagner and Chip Langan from the Defense Alliance. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleteau.
This past June, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs launched a redesigned website entitled MinnesotaVeteran.org. In our continuing efforts to be at the forefront of providing the best service and care for our state's 370,000 veterans, we want to know what you think of this website. Participate by taking a short 8-question survey. Visit MinnesotaVeteran.org and choose the survey option on the homepage carousel. Our website provides a vibrant, seamless view of our department and the resources available to Minnesota veterans. This is just another example of how we are committed to making Minnesota government better for veterans who serve, as well as those who continue to serve. Your feedback is important to us here at MDVA. Thank you in advance for taking the time to participate.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelleteau. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now from the Defense Alliance is Paul Wagner, the founder, and Chip Langan, the executive director. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Morning, Tom.
Morning. It's good to be here.
Paul, can you give us a little background? I know you're a business owner in Minnesota, and you're the founder of the Defense Alliance. How did all this come about?
I'm going to guess about 7-8 years ago. I've got a company I was lucky enough to buy from Mom and Dad, Minnesota Wire, and it got a contract that was for the Land Warrior program, and that kind of threw us into the defense industry outside of the medical side, and that then turned into I need to hang around some soldiers, and that led into the AUSA, but then also the Defense Alliance, and was out at Mr. Coleman's office, Norm Coleman's, as a senator. He said, I've got an event on Monday, and why don't you be there? And did so. And it was the president of Lockheed at the time that said, hey, I've got some big shoulders. Why don't you start a website? And we did.
And the purpose of the website, Paul?
Just to rally up small business and suppliers in the defense industry. And he was worried that we weren't getting the attention we deserved for the defense manufacturing sector in the Twin Cities.
So you accidentally got into this with a call to help fix some equipment and went in there and did a good job of it.
That's true.
Yeah, and then probably decided, I want some more of this, and then found out that was a little easier to say than harder to do, wasn't it?
It was very interesting times. But it was, you know, it was after 9/11, so we were full of passion, and we were able to rally a lot of employees as well as suppliers and really nailed this program and fixed it, and then got a reputation of fixing primarily communication devices for the Army.
So part of the purpose of forming the Defense Alliance was to help other businesses learn how to approach the defense industry?
That's well put. I oftentimes say I went to the state to try and learn what the defense contract was all about, and frankly, very quickly learned that I had a lot of body of knowledge that they did not have, some entrepreneurial skills mixed in there. And that was at the heart and soul of the Defense Alliance.
So you got into this business and started to grow, and you needed some help, and you hired this ex-Navy person here.
That came about with the president 6-7 weeks later saying, hey, I'm leaving town for Colorado. And I had asked him where those big shoulders were, and he said, hey, I've got somebody you want to look at. And that was Mr. Langan retiring down in Pensacola, Florida.
And Chip, that was the first time you met Paul?
It was. Actually, Paul came down to Florida for my change of command retirement ceremony in 2004. So that was my first chance to meet a big shot CEO after retiring from the service. And, you know, Paul's always talked about hiring veterans. That's one of the strengths of Minnesota Wire and the strength of Paul as a person. And I was fortunate to be one of those veterans that he hired right off the bat following 9/11. And so with Paul's vision about starting the Defense Alliance, he brought me in to kind of make that happen. So really between 2004 and today, it was a rapid growth in terms of a business alliance that now has 675 corporate members in 26 states, anchored right here in the Twin Cities.
So your background and your years in the Navy, and I understand you're a naval aviator?
I flew Seahawks for 21 years in the Navy. And so when my resume went into Paul Wagner, all he saw was management and leadership and a lot of smoke and mirrors. And he didn't know I didn't know anything about defense acquisition and the defense industry. He took a chance on me, and I learned lessons along with Paul in the first couple of years of the Defense Alliance. And the goal was to share those lessons, give back to the community, and help primarily Minnesota businesses that are in high technology jump into this very challenging business, which is contracting with the government.
We're speaking with retired Commander Chip Langan and Paul Wagner from the Defense Alliance on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Commander, where did you start after you met this gentleman, Paul Wagner, and he gave you his ideas? Were you overwhelmed a little bit? Or?
It was overwhelming, to say the least. Yeah, the landscape of what the defense industry is and was in Minnesota is a challenging one. You know, the base of the economy in Minnesota was really built by the defense industry between the 50s and the 80s, roughly, with Honeywell and Sperry Univac and ATK. The semiconductor was actually born here in Minnesota. But between about 1980 and today, there's been a slow kind of departure of the defense industry in Minnesota. So when we started Defense Alliance in 2004, the goal was to help try to reverse that trend, get people re-engaged in the industry. Because really, if you look at a lot of the technological advances in the past generation or two, they primarily come from the defense industry and the medical industry. And Minnesota has had both, and Defense Alliance has tried to restart the defense industry here, and we've had pretty good success, I think.
Paul, where did you get the idea to help other Minnesota businesses, deal with the defense industry and get contracts?
Well, some of it was really a business development investment. In order to gain, to rub some elbows with people that had a body of knowledge that I didn't, and those were larger companies. I was a small family business, and so we really needed to, it was easy to take a leadership position, give Chip a little bit of a budget and set him off. But I also hired Chip to help me, as I'm a very verbal guy. In his past life, he was a speechwriter for the Secretary of the Navy. So I knew he was side by side with some of the most senior people out there, and his written communication skills were off the charts good. So there was a prejudicial side of hiring him as well. Then when the Defense Alliance turned from a website into an explosive, really, growth, and Polenny had a lot to do with that. Tim turned to be a very good friend and a good ally, promoting jobs and small businesses and such. And once he hopped on board, it just really exploded with growth.
So, Paul, was the idea here to do some networking with other defense industry contractors and some training and share some best practices?
You know, there's a piece of that, but I oftentimes introduce myself as a God-fearing patriot in love with freedom. And a lot of it was after 9/11. I mean, I was just ticked off, and I wanted to give back. And there's a little bit of a prejudicial side of, taking care of those that are taking care of our freedom.
And Commander, when he had all of these ideas, and must have taken you a while to understand Paul Wagner and what he wanted you to do, how did you start? When did you start gathering up all these companies?
Well, Paul is, if nothing else, an idea generator, and a good one. This one turned out to be a very good idea. But yeah, the industry itself and all that goes into it is pretty vast, is pretty complicated. The idea was to gather the lessons that we've learned and figure out how to move forward. And a lot of that is getting small businesses to partner together to go after contracts, to go after opportunities, and along with prime defense contractors that are in this region. At the time, we had Lockheed Martin. We still have ATK, BAE Systems. But the idea really was to reinvent how it was done here, get people engaged. And some of that included engaging with veterans as well. As Paul says, the design inputs we can learn alone for technology from veterans is staggering, is very important for small businesses. And the network that we've developed around the defense industry is a very useful resource for veterans that are leaving the service, guard members that are currently in the service right now.
Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to learn some examples of how the Defense Alliance has helped our businesses here in Minnesota. We're speaking with retired Commander Chip Langan and Paul Wagner from the Defense Alliance on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been joined by retired Commander Chip Langen and Paul Wagner from Minnesota Wire, and they have formed a group called Defense Alliance in 2004 to help Minnesota businesses deal with DOD contracts. Commander, for our listeners out there, if they're interested in learning more about the Defense Alliance, do you have a website? Do you have an information place?
Absolutely. DefenseAlliance.com is the place to go. It's a free membership, free registration. You can go there as an individual to sign yourself up, or as an organization, a company, or an academic institution to become a member.
Who's eligible and why would they want to sign up?
Anyone is eligible. Ideally, we're looking for small, high-technology businesses. But we also connect with veterans. It's a great place for veterans to go to put their resumes online for free, or look for job postings for free as well from companies that are in the defense industry.
And I know you hold some events each year.
We do. We hold at least four events every year, and they range across a variety of topics that relate to the defense industry, government contracting generally. Pretty exciting events. We do really unique things, bring in speakers from the Pentagon and all around the country.
So educational, networking, meet people.
Yeah, it's primarily networking. It's a great place for veterans to go, especially to meet up-and-coming companies, entrepreneurs, find out about what's going on, not just in Minnesota, but in the region generally.
Paul, can you give us an example of how the Defense Alliance has helped a company grow?
You know, I've got one particular favorite, and wanted to use it as a means of emphasizing the medical side of the defense dollars. You know, 3% of the DOD budget has to go to small businesses, and a lot of those dollars create jobs, and those jobs morph into the medical side of things. But there's a small company called Berkeley Robotics that was then acquired via Lockheed Martin. And that what they did was they had these armature for soldiers' legs, basically bionic legs, to help a soldier lift things and to run faster, et cetera. And what happened about 4 months ago, I was down in their factory, and they had flipped it into a medical side. So they actually have paraplegics that wheel in. They get outfitted for new legs. They get trained to do stairs and such, and they literally fold up their legs, pack up, and get in their car and drive away. It's a tremendous sight to see veterans, as well as just the general public, to benefit from this kind of technology.
We're speaking with Paul Wagner and retired Commander Chip Langen on Minnesota Military Radio about the Defense Alliance, which is a national advanced defense technologies cluster based in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Its mission is to network and expand the region's defense industry, create and retain high-quality jobs, and further promote the region's important contributions to our men and women of the armed services. Commander, you applied for and got some SBA funds to do some consulting. Can you tell me about that?
We did. You know, thanks to Paul's vision back in 2004 of creating a network for small high-technology businesses around this industry. Between 2004 and 2010, we had created a pretty significant nexus of high-technology small business companies here in Minnesota primarily, but also in this region. And in 2010, the Small Business Administration, or the SBA, put out a call for high technology clusters. And this was stimulus dollars back in 2010 that were the government looking for building 10 high technology clusters in the country, three of which would be advanced defense technologies clusters. We saw that request from the SBA and said, hey, we do that now. We built this huge network. And it would be nice to get paid to do it. So we applied for that. There were 450 entries from around the country to build these clusters. And we were one of the 10 that were awarded. Initially, $600,000 per year for the first 2 years. And now it's $375,000 for the next 5 years, we believe.
Paul, your Navy commander did a pretty good job with that, didn't he?
It was as expected. And so I told him that he was going to score, and he did exactly that.
Commander, can you tell us, now that's for consulting, who do you consult with, what type of consulting, and if we have businesses here locally listening to this show, need some help, how do they reach in, under what circumstances can you help?
Yeah, we're different than a lot of industry networks in the sense that, yes, we do events and networking, and that's important to keep the network, the broader network growing. But that money from the federal government coming into the Twin Cities to Defense Alliance is very highly focused with consultants that we have. There's essentially two focused consultants four staff altogether at the Defense Alliance that work very directly with small high technology businesses that we think have significant potential to answer defense needs and also have the potential to commercialize technology, because this really is about growing jobs and growing small businesses in this region. So our work is very focused. It's very directed at business development and commercialization of really neat technologies.
And I'm guessing that a lot of this technology is saving lives of our servicemen and women.
Absolutely. As Paul referred to, a lot of the dollars that go into defense are for medical. If you look at the defense budget overall, there's a lot of bombs and bullets, of course, but the vast majority of the defense budget goes toward technologies to make things more effective, to make them more efficient, to keep soldiers safer, all of those things. And nearly all of those things have significant commercial applications.
And Commander, if we've got some local companies listening to the show and they need some help to try to attract or try to get some government contracts, can you give me an example of why they might call you and what you might do for them? We've just got a couple of minutes left.
Yeah, we are very excited all the time to find out that there's amazing eye-watering technology in this area, including startups. They're looking for ways to advance their technology. They can get a hold of the Defense Alliance at any time through defensealliance.com. I'd give out Paul Wagner's home phone number, but sure. I guess I won't here. But they can call me directly. Our numbers are on the website, and we're very eager to find out what's available in this region and work with you directly to advance high technology.
Commander, any final thoughts for our listeners?
This has been a fun ride, and again, I point to Paul's vision at Minnesota Wire for deciding to create this network, not really knowing where it would go. And here it is 9 years later, roughly, and we have federal tax dollars coming into this region, this state specifically, and we're growing jobs and advancing technology. It's been a really neat ride.
Thanks, Commander. Paul, you opened up by saying that you bought a small Minnesota company from your parents, and
yep.
and you've been running it, and you'd like me to believe it's still small, but did you dream back in 2004 that you'd meet all the people you've met and put together something like the Defense Alliance and help all of these business owners to hire veterans and get revenues?
Yeah, I've been blessed, that's for sure. And I don't take that lightly, you know, living where we are. The opportunities that we have here in this country are extreme. The freedoms that we've got still with us are like nothing else around the world. I'm just, number one, really, really proud of what Chip has accomplished in a very short period of time. To raise those kind of funds to breed jobs is just, I think, really amazing in 2.5 years. You know, the challenge I'd put out is the veterans that are out there. You can put your resumes online for free, because that's basically our bank of when somebody asks us looking for a veteran, where we send them to. And the other is, if you look a little deep, you can find out who's gaining those large contracts. And when you've got somebody gaining that kind of money, that kind of fast, they're hiring people and they hire a lot of veterans. So that's a big kick for us to try and help out the vets secure jobs as they come home.
Gentlemen, you're doing a great job with the Defense Alliance. And I want to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you for all you do.
That was Paul Wagner, the founder of the Defense Alliance, and retired Commander Chip Langan from the Defense Alliance on Minnesota Military Radio. Before we go, we have one upcoming event to mention. Are you or your family receiving VA benefits? The VA is asking you to share your story and help them reach more eligible veterans. Opportunities to help begin in Minneapolis on October 18th and run through the 20th. Come and talk about your experience with VA healthcare, education and employment support, memorials, and other benefits. For more information, please visit us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Representative John Klein, Paul Wagner, Chip Langan, Commissioner Larry Shelato of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk with Senator Al Franken and learn about Minnesota's veterans' homes. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at minnesotamilitaryradio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.